on this episode of Still Loading. Loading. Still loading. Hey guys, it's Josh, and welcome to this new episode of Still Loading, the first episode of 2019, and what's going to be a somewhat reoccurring segment, not necessarily happening every week, but I'm gonna do one of these every once a month, maybe not with as many people as I have in front of me, but you know, we'll see what happens, we'll see what the schedules bring, but I want to cover a lot of James Bond games. That's the next thing I want to tackle, but I don't want to do it all in succession and get them all out of the way. I'm a huge James Bond fan, so I want to give it its due and just go one at a time. And I figured to start off, go with the classic James Bond game, GoldenEye 007 for the N64. And for this week, to talk about it, brought a bunch of friends in to talk about. So everyone, I guess we'll go around starting here. So to the right of me, it is...
Justin.
And as you guys know, Justin has been on the show a bunch of times. And then moving on from him...
It's Brian.
From No Geeks Allowed.
Yeah, sure.
All right, and then...
This is James, the soothed sounds of No Geeks Allowed.
What? You're all on that show, too?
I don't know how.
Oh, my God.
They invited me once.
When did that happen?
I don't know. I got drafted.
I didn't know about this.
It's like Vietnam. I didn't want to be there.
So, to start off, let's just go into it. What are your guys' first memories of GoldenEye? Like, I guess in no particular order, just shout out. It's more fun when chaos is happening.
Everyone just yell.
Yeah, let's just yell. Let's see what happens.
It's one of my first, competitive multiplayer things with my friends. That was my intro to gaming, for competitive gaming, I would say. Not in the sense of playing for tournaments, but we played for money.
Really?
Yeah.
You would actually play?
I remember playing, especially in our neighborhood, everybody had an N64, and it was just one of the things that you established some sort of geeky dominance, being good at GoldenEye. It was one of them things where you just, you settled it in, complex, or was it? Yeah, no, Facility was the map. Multiplayer, we played a lot of.
Complex is pretty good too. So.
Complex is great. Complex is up there. Complex had that wall glitch, but everyone hiding on the walls and shit.
You got a pre-fire though.
I always remember when you would play the Facility level. That was the one with the bathrooms, right?
Yeah, that's the biggest takeaway.
And the person who always the person with the best spawn was always the person in the events, because you couldn't get there any other way for spawning in there.
No. You've never played with proximity mines, have you?
Oh no, it was awful.
There's a way you could get in there though, because if you've faced the toilet and held a couple C buttons and spun the aim, you shoot you right
you
up.
You couldn't get in
what?
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know about this. Well, so what glitch is this?
It's not I think they just made it to actually get in there, but it's still, you get a shot to shit if you do it. If someone's up there, they're just going to be like, no, I'm just going to wait for you to pop up. Done. Shooting you.
Yeah, you had to stare at the toilet and circle the drain with your aiming, and you would hit one of the C buttons and it would just shoot you up into the vent.
It sounds like you just flush yourself up into the vent.
I think that was maybe the Easter egg behind it, at least the mentality, but I remember climbing in there and just up there. We used to put on that paint. Ball mod or not mods, what are they called back then? Cheat codes?
Oh yeah.
That's so weird, but it was definitely one of the things where you just definitely could shoot the paintballs. That was my favorite part about that one, just decorating the walls with paint.
You're big on the paintballs then.
What's that?
You're big on the paintball mode?
That was my favorite mode.
Because everyone has their own favorite mode. Justin, did you have one with your friends?
Paintball DK mode.
DK mode with the big,
with the big heads.
Yes.
See, we were all about one hit kills. So we would put on
with the golden gun mode.
No, we would do we just do one hit kills. I forget what the actual name of the mode was, but we use throwing knives. And since that game was very laggy,
license to kill.
License to kill. Mode. And you would go around and shoot throwing knives at each other, and it was so bad because if you stood in front of you directly in front, it wouldn't even go the way you wanted it to do.
Nah.
So it was just awful. So you just run around in circles, just throwing knives at each
other.
I
always remember the worst way to take out someone in multiplayer was just melee. If it was just you and your friend and you didn't have any weapons and you're just trying to melee each other, they would never hit. The hit detection was fucking weird.
My favorite was especially going when you're chopping people. he moves his hand so slow, but it sounds like he's throwing like a haymaker of the century. It's like, and it's just one arm just super slowly moving.
That's a Bruce Lee one-inch punch.
I guess that's what it is.
That's how I always viewed like Skyrim and shit like that. They would have like this really aggressive like chop, but when your character actually goes to swing their sword, it's like...
She's heavy.
I'm an old man already.
And I remember, especially going back with the chop thing, is we noticed it when we were younger, but, like, you know, we'd always have those melee, the one-hit kill with melee, and, like, no matter who you picked, you all had James Bond's hands. Like, you could pick the guy with the suit and, like, the gloves, or you could pick a woman. Everybody has James Bond's hands.
Absolutely. I just remembered now the tagline I was going to use, just speaking of, like, weird things. I was going to say, Odd Job is a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was shorter than everyone, right?
Yeah, so it was which is weird, because that character's not short. In the actual James Bond universe.
No. Regular size. I think it was mildly racist.
Regular size, like, think it's just, like, racist because Odd Job's Asian?
I think they got him confused with that guy from the little butler from The Man with the Golden Gun.
Right, that's Knick Knack.
Yeah, I think they got him confused between the two because Odd Job, yeah, regular guy, well, regular size.
They were really insensitive to Hervé Villechaize, who played Knick Knack, too. Because, like, the way Bond disposes of Knick Knack at the end of The Man with the Golden Gun, he just puts him in a case. I'm dead serious. Like a trunk, like a suitcase.
Yeah. Does he throw him into the water?
No, he leaves. He ties him to the crow's nest on the boat and just leaves him up there. And that's how the movie ends, with them panning out.
I'm pretty sure he
just
died.
See him sitting there. No, he's still alive.
I think if you tied someone and held him in a case and just as you're sailing away, I'm like, that dude just might die from starvation.
So then, as he's like picking
him, picks him up.
As Bond picks him up while he's in the case, you just hear him go, like, "Ah, you'll be sorry." He does a French accent. I can do is like, "You'll be sorry. I may be small, but I never forget." And that's like one of his last
lines. Is that a thing for small people? They forget because they're small? I don't know. I don't get that.
They're just like tiny elephants.
I think he's going people. With like, "I may be, you know, like, you know, I may be dumb, but I never." It's that cliche where, you know, "I may be this, but I never forget" type of thing. Like, it's, and they just went with the height joke, of course, because
I may be tiny, but I won't forget.
That was the other weird thing. Like, Knick Knack in the final, when Bond's fighting Knick Knack at the end, Knick Knack's just throwing bottles of wine at him. Mm-hmm. There's no wine in those bottles. It's empty glass. It's just shatter, I guess. And
Scaramanga was a huge alcoholic.
Bond breaks a chair to like deflect the bottles, but he gets into this perfect like H shape, so that way he can just like. It's ridiculous.
I thought you were going to say he breaks the chair and wine comes out.
They just mix everything up.
Who's the sound effect, or who's the props guy?
Where's the Foley artist?
He's hiding wine and chairs.
But no, so yeah, the multiplayer is by far the most popular aspect of it. I know we dove right into it, but what else did you like about the multiplayer? One thing that sticks out to me that I hated but I still love at the same time was proximity mines.
Yeah.
Because Justin over here just, he knew where everything was at, and I was new to it at the time, and I still am, I guess, technically. I barely play it. But he knew where everything was at, so he'd go to the proximity mines and just wait there at the spawn and just throw stuff above the doorway. Right.
Just
kill
litter
you.
Spawn areas.
Once you realize that there's like set spawn points, like specifically on Complex, I think it's like up to 3 people can like pretty much camp the areas, and they all just throw proximity mines on the spawn points. That 4th player gets just every single time they spawn in there.
We used to just bully all the time with that. You just
and they burst them with rage. So
I remember like that was the first like game raging experience when you're the 4th man trying to fight to get out, and you just kind of hope that they slip up or they have to like they run out not catching their ammo, and you just dude, that was I remember smacking controllers out of people's hands just so I could get a break. Like, stop.
Oh yeah.
I got so mad at you and pretty much anyone else, like, because it was him and I think it was Steve. Do you remember Steve?
Yeah.
I don't want to say his last name, but
Steve Stevenson.
Yeah, Steve Stevenson. Steve Stevers.
Spelled with like PH too. Like Steven.
No, Steven. It's Steven S, like with a V, but then Stevers is PHERS.
It's Steve with a G, like Jeff, but Steve. Oh my
God. I want to know where does the G go?
Before the S.
It's just a silent G. Like, at least the G in Jeff has a purpose.
It became the silent G.
Silent G.
The silent G. What's his nickname?
The guy I buy drugs from. The silent G.
Yeah.
That's going to be my next Goldeneye handle. The silent G.
Silent G. He's going to be a villain.
Oh, no, right? Oh man.
Just Bond just gets infuriated by like phonetically looking at his name, just like, I'm out. Calls MI6, like,
there's,
I'm done.
There's a podcast I listened to called Hollywood Babylon, and the host of it, Ralph Garman, hates when people have their names spelled differently than what he's used to.
Yeah.
And so like, right? Yeah, he's like a name Nazi. Like, he's so it's all for joke. He's not actually upset by it. You could tell it bothers him.
I wish he was really upset by it. Well, you could way better.
Well, you know he's bothered by it a little, but he like hypes, because it's a live show, so he hypes it up just for the sake of comedy. But like, there'll be people that will spell their names like in the strangest ways, or if it's a name that doesn't make any sense, he'll just say not a fucking name and just just call the person out on the audience. He'll just say not a fucking name. There was a girl that I. It wasn't a girl that I met, but I heard about. Her name was LaDasha, but it was spelled LA-A, so it was La-Dash-A.
Oh, wow.
Oh, they
spelled it. Oh, my God. But it's a hyphen, but they said it phonetically as Dash.
Oh, so she's got it's so many La-Dasha. Questions so when she's in school, I bet.
When you're
oh,
writing right. it, it just looks like La-A, but it's LaDasha.
White people have some crazy names.
La-A is pretty good. That's like La-A.
But, no, so, what were you... I remember this didn't happen to me, but we have a friend. We're just dropping all these names that no one knows, but our it's friend Steve. John, yeah, Steve and John with another silent G.
Steve J.
But he was playing GoldenEye with his sister, and his sister is much better than him at it, and probably better than us for that.
That's
matter.
Why he can't say his name.
No,
shame him right now.
No, I call said John. Out. His name is John. I'm just, but I remember he was playing facility. And he dropped down into the vent. He dropped down into the bathroom, and the whole stall, like the stall door, was covered in proximity mines.
Just on the other side, waiting for
it. So as soon as he opened the door, he blew himself.
That's the worst spawn if you were playing facility with proximity mines. Yeah, you're in that vent. You're like,
you came out. You had like the low tier guns, like right at your access. Like there's like the good tier guns were like right in that main hallway at the bottom. It was just like, you want the good stuff. It's everybody's gonna get to it.
Well, someone came to that bathroom with this proximity mines. You ain't
the only
down.
Way. The only way you're gonna do is if you can get grenades or something to blow them up before you.
I mean, that was the thing. Is like, I love the no clip fire, where like if someone's hiding in the facility, you just keep throwing bombs. Eventually, the fire will get to them. Like it just you just keep peppering it
because it would just keep going. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Nope.
So if that's what they would do, they would like layer it with proximity mines. You couldn't put proximity mines too close to each other, right?
Exactly. It was like an art form because you would like try and set them up with the perfect distance where the one exploded and triggered the next one, but not too close where that you just pretty much blow yourself up.
Or if you put it like one in a certain spot and know it's going to launch their character model in a certain direction, you put the proximity mine where you know they're going to go. So it's like, because you know, like it pushes you pretty far after you get hit, and it'll push you right into another one. So you just like bouncing around till you die.
The countless amount of times I spent like when it was just me and I would like play multiplayer and just have the split screen up just so I could practice proxy setting. Mm-hmm. It was just like, it was an art form, especially even like I remember just taking even the remote mines and just see how many I could stack. Like I used to remember that number, like how many you could stack outward, and you could see it too. It was kind of funny. Like you turn a corner, you just see like this just 18 inches of just.
I will say this: I think every single person here on Silo always took the C4 at some point and stacked them all on a big line and shot it. Yep. Every single person has always done it. It's the one thing that's completely unnecessary part of the game, but everyone always did it.
It was fun. It was like a cool little... There's so many... I mean, so many sounds in that game that were just very... They're so loud. Like, there's, like, no sound guy who, like, there's no leveling at all in that game. Like, all of a sudden, like, one explosion goes off and you hear the... And then, like, that's all you could hear. Like, the whole game just goes silent, but explosions.
It's like cracking the speakers. You know, he's like, the audio just break.
One of my favorite things that they would do is, like, you would shoot, like, inanimate objects and it would just explode. Like, you could shoot a chair and it would just blow up.
That little fire.
I never understood that. I always amaze me every single time.
Just a you little don't know why they're doing
in
that.
The background.
Explosions!
I still remember, like, the one in a... It was one of the Severnaya levels. There was a little helicopter model on a desk, and if you shot it, it made this monstrous explosion. Yeah. It was huge.
That was definitely an Easter egg.
Yeah, they definitely put that in there, like, we're going to have fun with this. But it was like, it was like this random thing where I'm like, why is the thing exploding so big? It's like half the freaking cabin.
You look at Michael Bay directed this game.
I know, right? The multiplayer is just so influential too, because I mean, they didn't really have couch co-op FPSs at the time. Like that was just that was a brand new thing for consoles. Obviously, you had console shooters on the PC and stuff, or not console shooters. You had FPSs on the PC,
yeah. Doom,
but you still
and
need
Marathon
to like LAN
and,
party or play online. Like you didn't have like you can't really have couch co-op PC gameplay. It doesn't work that way.
I mean, there's a big draw for the N64 is that the four ports where like you could play with like four people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think really before that it was just 1v1s for everything.
Exactly.
So I mean, this was like a revolutionary, not just for the game, but like they used that fact, like for that console, like it was specifically made for those type of games.
No, sorry.
Well, I was going to also say, it's like kind of crazy how that multiplayer also came out like the very last minute for that game.
They made it what, 6 weeks?
Yeah,
it was the last 6 weeks
by
of
like
development
one guy.
That they made it. Was it really only one guy?
It was mainly one guy.
That's nuts. I mean, that explains
Steve,
why it's so imbalanced, but it. His name is Steve.
Yeah, his name was actually Steve.
Was it actually Steve?
It was actually Steve.
Shout
with
out
a silent
Steve.
G.
Steve G.
Steve G.
The silent G.
My favorite thing about GoldenEye was like if someone was like, they're just being like not a good player when they're getting spanked so hard, we made them pick Jaws. It's just like, you know what sucks? You have to play Jaws now.
The tallest
player.
Yeah,
oh my god,
that's
just
the biggest target.
Just shoot him in the knees, he dies.
we made anyone who was like just dominating.
Jazz Jaws. Yeah, we use more as a punishment, but that's a good.
That's more of a balancing.
Yeah, we needed that for like people who are actually doing really well. They were just like on fire. We're like, okay, you're being Jaws now, because it's like everyone's like going to like not want to play in a minute.
Yeah, we did give new players odd job. That was definitely the.
We didn't. These guys are dicks.
Nah, new players got odd job. That's a good thing, man. They were new. They weren't going to win.
I think the best part about it is that the developer probably didn't even think about how unbalanced it would be to have a shorter character and a taller character than all the others. Like, you just, I don't think I would have thought of that. I don't think how I would, that would have affected, like, because, I mean, you have to aim differently. Like, Jaws, you don't have to aim at all. You just shoot.
Yeah,
odd
just
job,
fire.
You have to aim down to, like, to get to him.
Annoying.
Yeah, it was annoying.
Yeah. You eventually got good with it, though. It's like, if you mention enough people play odd job, you're like, I can now.
We just screen peek and just start slowly aiming down.
I think everyone is screen peeked in this game. Yeah. Every single person.
You don't screen peek, you're a liar. Yeah. I don't trust you.
Everyone has a 1 point, especially when you're a kid, because you don't think any.
Okay, so here's a question to everyone in the room right now. Did anyone put the cardboard divider down?
Yeah, we did.
Anyone do it?
Yep.
No?
We bust out the cardboard divider once.
No, I never did.
Yeah.
Did you actually like hook it up to the TVs?
No. You just take a piece of cardboard and you just tape it down. Like, if it's a big enough TV, just tape it down the middle off the top. So, like, you couldn't screen peek.
No, we taped it this way.
Oh, that,
we taped it across.
I guess it depends on if you're... That wouldn't work for four players.
Well, we did it with teams. Like, with, like two.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it was team. It was definitely... It was
you couldn't
two
do
it
four player. Yeah.
No, I think... the spiritual successor had this, but did Perfect Dark was a spiritual successor to GoldenEye.
Mm-hmm.
I know Perfect Dark had this. Did GoldenEye have like King of the Hill and like all those different game modes, or was
I
it
think
just like
King of the Hill?
No Capture the Flag
I think
or anything
it, no,
like that.
I think
it was just
Capture
like
the Flag.
It did.
Yeah,
I think
they had a couple modes.
Yeah, there's a couple modes that like no one used. But
yeah, I never played them.
Yeah, like no one used them.
No.
There's like License to Kill, Man with the Golden Gun, and then regular.
Yeah,
exactly. The Golden Gun was always a fun.
You only
thing
live
too,
twice is another one.
That's a good.
Yeah, that was the 2-kill one. That was like the regular mode, which is two lives.
It's a good reference to one of the movies.
Yeah.
I like that.
Is it a reference to Casino Royale?
God. I hate you.
Actually, it's funny, like, it's doubling down, kind of doubling down on the racism in a way, because Odd Job was shorter, and then You Only Live Twice is the Bond movie where James Bond puts on a turns Japanese. I'm dead serious.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
They give him like this awkward tan, this like wig, and they pull his eyes back a little.
Yeah.
Or they like put makeup on his eyes to make him look quote unquote more Asian.
Arguably the most racist James Bond movie
so
ever
bad.
Made.
It was so bad. He marries a Japanese woman and as part of his cover, he marries this Japanese woman,
which did not pay off in any way.
No,
the
there's no reason.
There's absolutely no reason.
And she didn't notice like his eyes taped back. Like,
she knew.
Oh,
so
at no point was she like, "No, I ain't buying this."
Well, so apparently the reason that happened was the actress who played his wife went like auditioned for the main role of the main main Bond girl who was Japanese. The character's name is Kissy Suzuki, but I don't remember what the actress's name is.
Nagasaki Mitsubishi.
Sure. That's awful.
Nailed it.
No, so they had she auditioned for it and didn't get it, and she was so upset about it that she threatened to kill herself, and the producers didn't want her to kill herself, so they created a role for her out of thin air. That, I don't know if that's true. I heard this from a James Bond podcast, and I don't know where they got their information from.
Thought that there was going to be a happy ending to that story.
No, yeah. There isn't.
Because I'm like, if I remember correctly in the book, that's actually what he does, though. He does go to like a fishing village and like marry like a girl like that is a part of his cover.
See, I know. Have you read the book?
Some of them.
Some of them. They're so slow. And
they are.
Ian
they're
Fleming also is cheap. Like... I have a bunch of them.
Oh, really?
Not like original printings or anything.
Like you actually get the hard, like no. Or the soft cover. They're like they're not long. They're like you know like 150 pages, like $25 each.
I saw
that. I was like, nope.
I was at a convention. I paid like $1 a piece.
You bastard.
I know, right? Well, Ian Fleming also was not the most progressive person. Just say it lightly. He had a big problem with homosexuality. Like all of his villains are gay in some way. Like,
but didn't he play Gandalf?
No. Ian Fleming is the author. Guy who played Gandalf, was that Ian McKellen, right?
Yep.
That's close. Yeah. I feel like I was in there.
I mean, yeah. Ian's,
the silent G.
Half of the name, right?
Counts. That's good enough for me.
Ian G.
No, so Ian Fleming. Though Christopher Lee, who played Scaramanga in The Man with the Golden Gun, is a relative of Ian Fleming, the author of the James Bond books. He wanted Christopher Lee to play.
It was Count Dooku.
Yeah, there you go. And Dracula, and he was also in Lord of the Rings. He was Saruman, the evil wizard.
That's right. I forgot about that too.
Christopher
Lord of the Rings.
So, yeah. And the thing is with Christopher Lee is that he probably would have been an awesome Bond only for the fact that he actually was like a special ops like a secret agent essentially during World War II for Britain. There's stories, I don't know what movie it was for, whether maybe it was for the Hammer horror films or like if it was for some other like movie he was in, but they were trying to find a sound effect for like someone getting shot or like a neck being broken or something like awful like that. And he's like, no, that doesn't sound that way. You don't know, his files are sealed. Like, you don't know awesome. What he actually did during World War II.
It's like Mr. Rogers.
He's killed some shit.
He's killed some shit.
I would love Mr. Rogers as James Bond. That'd be great.
Oh, yeah, my God. Fred Rogers. He's like, well, neighbor.
Just sipping a martini.
Will you be my neighbor?
He puts on, like, a hand pump and just chokes a guy out with it.
That would be great.
I want to see a GoldenEye hack where they put Mr. Rogers in.
That's what we need.
You know what?
It's got the sweater
probably
on.
Is already done.
I believe. There was a Doom hack where they put Tim Allen on everything.
I played that.
Like, oh my God,
They put every single sound effect and all the textures were replaced with pictures of Tim Allen. It's the same picture just repeated over and over again. So every time you shoot, you're,
I played it. It's awesome.
There was a Team Fortress 2 hack where they replaced all the sound effects out with Hank Hill sound effects. So every time you shoot like a grenade launcher, you're, whoa!
See, the internet isn't so bad.
It's got some good stuff in
it. Bobby! Dang it, Bobby!
Propane!
Oh, man, I got a load of TF2.
I found it online. I found it on YouTube.
Games we need to be made in life. Stop making Pikmin 6 and shit like that. Just give me more like this goofy shit.
Make me
Team 2. Team Fortress 2 with Hank Hill.
What a ridiculous thing. No, so back to GoldenEye.
Oh, shit, yeah.
That was what we're here for, right? No, so the multiplayer was obviously groundbreaking. I mean, it's the thing that's lasted this long. No one really remembers a lot else with it. But what was cool about GoldenEye is that it really, besides the multiplayer revolutionizing FPSs, not just for consoles but also for PCs, that also revolutionized the single player campaign, because up until then it was pretty much kill all the enemies in a level, like get from point A to point B. You can kill as many or as little enemies as you want. That's how Doom was. That's how Quake was. Not taking anything away from it, they're still super fun, but that's just how they designed their games.
Yeah, no objectives, I mean.
And GoldenEye, there is actually objectives. And if I remember correctly, the harder difficulties added more objectives for you.
Special agent, like double O agent, and shit like that.
Agent, yeah.
And so
that's how you got the cheat codes. You had to beat them at like certain times and stuff like that. So there was like facility. Almost achievements before achievements were a thing. Yeah, you know?
And that's what I noticed a lot of like really good game developers from that era do stuff like that, where they reward you for experimenting in the game. So like... like we just said with GoldenEye, the cheats would get activated if you beat certain parts of the game in certain ways. Also, in the Ratchet and Clank games, you unlock different things by doing like they give you vague hints of what to do, but it doesn't really tell you deliberately what to do. So there'd be like a they would call it, like, they didn't call it achievements. I forget what they called it. But there'd be a, like, a little, which was called achievement for lack of a better word, called, like, World Buster. And it would tell you what planet it's on. And all of a sudden, you would go through that planet, you might see, like, a globe. And if you shoot the globe until it explodes, you would get it, but it doesn't tell you.
Oh, well,
you would have to infer it from the name of, like, the achievement. I think it was just called a secret. I think they just called it secrets.
By the way, I just want to point this out there, and I didn't know if anyone else didn't, like, knew this, but I learned this, like, from researching this. You can unlock those cheats by button combinations also.
Really?
I never knew that.
I didn't know that either until I
actually... It was like Game Shark and
inputting.
Yeah, input, like, the old school, just input button combos, and you can unlock the cheats that way. Never knew that in my entire life.
No, I just found this out yesterday.
Really?
I mean, I figure,
like, you could probably do that in almost any game, just, you know...
It's just crazy, like, no one ever mentioned it. Everyone did the actual, like, I guess the legit way to get a cheat, which is kind of a weird sentence right there. But, yeah, no one actually did the button combinations. Nope, no one knew they existed.
Now, I remember we busting out the Game Shark for this, and that was so we got all the characters to play. Remember, like, that's how you got the shotgun. The shotgun, you couldn't use in multiplayer, but the shotgun was, for whatever, hidden behind a cheat. Like, so I was like, all right, that's how you get the shotgun. And I was like,
there was a lot of stuff that they hid in the code that they never intended to play. So, like, for example, there's, like, some multiplayer levels that you can access. Like, there's some single player levels that they must have thought it could have been multiplayer levels at one time, because if you look in, like, when people looked into the code, there's actually, like, spawn points for players and item drops and stuff like that, but it never really made it to the final cut. There's another level where it was just, like, incomplete. I forget what the name of the level was, but it literally is just, like, white, like, polygons that you can barely see. Is it Citadel?
Yeah, it's
the development test level,
mm-hmm.
which I've played a game of multiplayer on that.
It's, how awful was that?
It's terrible because the textures don't render in, so you can just see it's on the level.
You also can't walk up, like, platforms. Like, you can't walk up ramps.
There's certain areas. It's a huge level for a test development. It's very vertical, surprisingly.
Considering that you can't climb.
It's just, like,
can't jump.
It's just so weird. Like, there's certain spots where you can't, like, you can tell there's supposed to be, like, a ramp, but it just wasn't one. But then there's other parts, like, you can go up the whole level, and, like, you look all the way down. It was a fun little test thing we did.
They also had, what was it? So they had, like, those bonus levels. They also did some, goddamn, I just lost what I was going to say.
Did all the James Bonds in the game.
There we go. We'll go with that. I'll edit that out. Yeah, they had all the James Bonds in the game.
Well, except what's his face? The one guy that did the one movie.
George Lazenby.
Yeah, I blanked on his name there for a second. But yeah, they had the other three.
George with a J.
Exactly.
Chase Silent.
Silent J. I'm at George. Him and Winnie the Pooh hang out, right? I'm pretty sure I'm right.
That's it, right? Yeah. Winnie the Pooh and James Bond.
I had bootleg cartoons as a child.
All my media references have always been mixed up.
Yeah, it's Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Bond.
Yeah. He's just a gopher.
Christopher Robin's just Jaws. He's, like, just chewing into all the animals in the 100-acre wood. Turns into a murder mystery. Like, oh, I can't believe Christopher Robin would eat the jugular of poo.
Josh, I don't even want to look at your Google search history.
we're over here riffing. You're just getting pretty intense. I was like, man,
bringing up some traumatic memories as a child.
I hate sharks.
No, the reason I even, the reason I asked all you guys on here, too, one, Justin I invited on because him and I grew up together, so we played a lot, and then you guys, specifically Brian, are huge James Bond fans, mm-hmm. and then James pointed out afterwards, like, well, there's four of us, it's the only way to play GoldenEye, so it kind of makes sense to have four-way.
Oh, okay.
I knew we were getting there.
Four-way with a silent F.
It's our way, then.
I was like, that's perfect. You just came up with that.
I don't know where we just went with that.
I know where we're going.
You just told me where we're going.
Just our way. Unfold that futon right there.
Got a little hour.
An hour. That kind of couch cast and judge.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I better get a gig out of this. I'm open for anything, but I better get something out of this.
$2.
Well, you got your new name out of it, the Silent G.
Silent G.
That's your porn star name now, the Silent G. Like, what does that even mean? You just fart the whole time?
Oh, don't find out.
It's real niche porn. Like, gotta be into that one thing.
Oh my god.
Just kidding, they can talk about off brand cartoons.
Yeah, no, it's a podcast. No one's going to know.
It's a form of no sound.
I just got to remind them every now and again.
I guess it's more just like for your own confidence. You feel more confident naked, so you have to. You just record naked all the time. Little does everyone know.
You got to picture me naked when I'm doing this. That way it doesn't give you anxiety.
I'm going to post. Oh, man. That way it doesn't give you anxiety.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It relieves the tension in the room if you just picture me naked.
There's no one else in the room. It's just you.
It's theater of the mind.
To him, there's more people in the room.
Yes.
Oh my god.
It's me and the other me's hanging out.
But, okay. We were talking about multiplayer a lot. Do you guys remember what your favorite mission for single player was in GoldenEye? Because that was a good segue, but anyway.
It's a good way. Break us out of the darkness.
Yeah.
Now, mine was I think it was Train.
Yeah.
Train was really good.
You bust open the box, get that RCP-90, and you just shred that level.
Yeah.
That was easy. I remember, like, today. I mean, it's the quickest map, I think. I don't think anyone's...
I don't know.
Dam's quicker, but...
Yeah, you could literally
Dam
just...
Was fun.
You could just run through Dam.
Yeah.
On the easiest difficulty, you just run through and just jump off. You're like, oh, that took 30 seconds.
I remember I liked Dam a lot because I was a huge fan of the movie, so the dam in the movie, it's like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
You see Bond running across it, and then like bungee jump off of it.
And then decide to make that a level.
They decide to make it a full level of like him infiltrating the base, and I just liked exploring that, because it was cool, because I was like, oh my god, it's like, it's a part of the movie that I didn't get to see. Because it felt like it looked just like it felt
you
like
go
it was
in
just
the dam
movie.
And like you have no reason to go in the dam until you do like the other harder difficulties, and it's like there's a really fleshed out level.
It's surprisingly big for like you think an N64 game, and they had that section that was like cut out. Everyone always looked in the distance. That was supposed to be where you get the bungee equipment, but they cut that out because the level's already freaking huge as it is.
Yeah, so. You just go to the edge there.
Yeah,
I also liked that. It was, I don't know, it just felt like I said, it felt like you were exploring another part of the movie. The one thing I thought was kind of interesting is, like, the music for the movie actually, I know the movie came out first by, like, 2 years.
Yeah.
But, like, the music for the movie kind of matched the games in a weird way. Like, because they made, like, this weird, like, kind of grindy electronic music. I don't know how to describe it. It wasn't clean sounding. It sounded, like, really, like... noisy, if that makes sense. Not in a bad way. I mean, some of the music in GoldenEye is pretty awful, but in the opening scenes of the movie, there's a like a after the opening credits, there's a car chase with what you find out with like a Xenia on a top. Great innuendo there.
she get it. Famke Janssen, she get it.
Yeah. She did get it.
Jean Grey, she get it.
But so you're driving down there. They're driving down like a hill, like a mountainside or whatever, like on this mountain road, and they're racing on it. And the music for it is fucking awful. It's this weird like disco jazz.
It's early '90s music, basically.
Yeah.
It's like a weird, or I would say like it's a throwback to like late '80s like car chase music, almost in a weird way. I remember that exact scene in that movie.
The one thing, because a lot of people don't like the Brosnan movies anymore, like just mainly because they are really cheesy. Like I love them still, but
they're my favorite.
They're super cheesy. But the one thing I think I will always love about them is the fact that they spawned all the Bond video games. Like if it wasn't, I mean, there are some prior to this. Like there's a Game Boy game, and there's also
there's an NES game.
There's a Genesis game actually.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way: they're the spawn of the good Bond games.
There's a complete. They did the remake with Sean Connery for From Russia with Love.
Yeah,
there's that game,
and he did all the voices for it. Yeah. I think too, which is weird to me that
it was supposed to be like a sequel to that. That one, was it the James Bond game where they did their own like movie to it? It's a Pierce Brosnan one.
Oh yeah, they did.
We've talked about it before.
There's a trilogy of them. There's Agent Under Fire. There's Nightfire, and then
there's a ton of.
Bond oh my god!
Shit.
Hold on. Can I see it over there? I have it in my collection. Everything or Nothing. Everything or Nothing.
Yeah.
That's the other one.
I actually really enjoyed that game.
That was cool because it was third person. I think too.
Yeah. That was like, and I thought it was a better story than most of the Brosnan movies.
Well, I always liked the fact that like they made the games into like their own movies, for the fact they had like a full like Bond song, like a Bond intro song, like like the movies do. And then the storylines were a little cliche, but you know, whatever. It's James Bond. It's James Bond. Yeah. But no, I loved those games. And like GoldenEye set it all up. Like if it wasn't for the fact that GoldenEye became so outrageously popular, you wouldn't have. I mean, you don't have James Bond games for the most part anymore, which is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird. Like there's not been any Daniel Craig really.
Can we go out on a limb and say that GoldenEye is the only good video game movie?
No.
No.
What's better than that? I mean, how many good based off a movie?
The Lion King, Aladdin.
Aladdin. What? You're going to go with Aladdin? Aladdin's a great game.
Nah, the Lion King is good. Aladdin is good.
You got me with Aladdin. I was like, shit.
The One Chronicles of Riddick game.
That was a good game, too.
That was a really great
game. I mean, he helped develop it, which is kind of cool.
Considering the movie was, like, not good, but the game was, like, way better. No, not you're thinking Pitch Black. I mean, the Chronicles of Riddick. Like,
oh, I loved the Chronicles of Riddick, yeah. But like looking back on it now, it's really cheesy.
Like, I didn't like that movie. I liked Pitch Black.
Pitch Black was really good too.
It was the only movie I liked out of that series.
So like Chronicles of Riddick hit me right at the time. It was like I was the perfect age for that movie when I watched it because it was like over the top action. It's the quintessential like mid-2000s action movie.
Big time.
Like, so if you don't like mid-2000s stuff, you're not going to like this movie.
It feels like the definite precursor to the later Fast and the Furious movies, but just in this fantasy setting.
Yes.
It's just Vin Diesel.
He just drifts
the
spaceship.
I wonder if the new Fast and
Furious... actually, in that movie, I don't remember.
It took me a second to...
There's a possibility that might be in there, so...
It's all about family.
Family.
He might have even said that. It's just a one-for-one rip.
That's my Vin Diesel impression. Boo. Family.
Family. Play D&D. Family.
Last Witch Hunter, whatever his D&D
thing. I still will say, you know, when we went to that ride in Universal, the one prop they had is they walk in the line. It's just a picnic table from that movie. And that's it.
With, like, all prop right. Corona bottles.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right. It's like, that's the best thing you come up with. It's like the fucking picnic table.
It's in almost every movie.
It's so stupid.
It's supposed to be for family. I love those movies, like, unabashedly. Like, I love those movies.
I will
They're
say
dumb
that.
As hell, but I love them.
They're fun to watch.
Oh my god, we went so far off topic.
So we're talking about favorite levels.
So you're saying favorite level. So I'm going to go with a level that, I mean, I always enjoyed for one specific reason, is the ending, the Aztec.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the secret levels. Awesome, yeah. I think they just did a great job for a secret level. Like, it was pretty great. I love that scene. Like, you know, the whole Moonraker aspect was fun. But the fact that Space Shuttle launched and you get the last, you know, that was great. You had Jaws in there. I think you had the double rocket launchers in that game, yeah, which was a bitch. I think everyone, you know, had problems with that for a little bit. But that was definitely my favorite one.
What about you, Justin?
The train was definitely my favorite, but probably the most memorable for all the wrong reasons was, I think it was Statue, where you have to, like,
so you get chase the black around, box.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have to chase around Valentine or whatever. And AI was so garbage.
Yeah.
And he'd always get killed, and if you're trying to do it on, like, one of the harder difficulties, you would lose the mission instantly.
I remember that.
That is one of my... most disliked. There's only two most disliked levels in the game. It's that and Cavern.
Oh, Cavern, yep.
Those are the two. Because I think it's like a similar thing. We have to chase like Alex Trevelyan. He's always standing in the elevator just shooting you. God damn it.
I say Frigate's my favorite because you get that Phantom gun. That's the only time you get it in that gun. You're on that big boat. I was mm-hmm. like, I like that one. I thought that was really cool because I like the way that gun sounded.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good level, too.
That was really good.
Now, is there any other things... like that you guys want to talk about, because we're not done yet. I want to actually talk about the movie too, because I figure it's a tie-in, you might as well talk about the movie. But is there any other things about the game specifically that like we haven't talked about? Like we kind of touched on the music, but there's not much to really describe, like unless we just like describe every note, which would be boring as hell.
I wanted to just bring up one thing, is like just about how that game kind of like for a single player, again, console shooter, like the heavy reliance on stealth in that game was kind of like surprising considering the age. Like, that's not stealth games were, you know, not first person shooters. So, but if you remember, like, that game was very much like you got like a silenced pistol running around shooting cameras.
Right, yeah.
And, I was like, as I was doing some research, it was interesting how they did like the actual stealth mechanic. So, what happened is if you like you fired and shot someone, it did like a radius check. So, like, you know, like within a radius, if there's another guard, they would like pull another guard to you. But if you fired again within a certain amount of time, that radius would get bigger. So you would pull even more people. So if you fired multiple times, it was like it can encourage you to do like one shot, like headshots to people, and like, you know, wait a couple seconds, time would reset. So like they actually intentionally made it so like stealth was important in the game, which I thought was just a fascinating considering the game came out with like 97.
Yeah.
That's they didn't really see stuff like that. I mean, well,
Metal Gear Solid also came out in 97, but that, the whole purpose of that game was stealth versus this, which is like you didn't really see stealth in FPSs specifically.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They definitely give you an option too. I mean, at least you know, you could just gun it with like an AK and just
oh my god, that's all I ever did. But I survived.
I tried to stealth everything.
I did. I love the silence pistol aspect and like the judo chop, like Austin Powers. Judo chop!
That was a pretty good Austin Powers, actually.
But my favorite, like when you shot the guys, like their hitboxes all had different detections. Like you shot a guy in the groin, he did the, oh my groin. Yeah. And you shot a guy in the head, he did that weird thing, like he fell to his knees, and then he fell. It was like really slow. And then like you shot him in the throat, he did like,
he actually
grabbed his throat. I was like, I remember like, it didn't dawn on me then that it was impressive, but like as later on I got into other games, I'm like, GoldenEye did this way better in like 97. Like how are you guys not up to par with like, that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I mean, well, the...
You can shoot guns out of their hands, too. And that was... Yeah. I loved
and
that.
And hats off their heads.
Yep. Yeah. That's right. We used to just de-had people all the time.
Take the sniper and...
That was always worse when you're trying to, like, throw, like, you know, throwing knife at someone, all of their hat just flies out. Like, come on!
And they don't notice. They're just like... Yeah.
Their expression's great. They're just like, what?
What's that breeze? That's amazing. I forgot all about that. They also had like the enemies also had like a camera radius, so it wasn't even just like a sound thing. Like if you weren't in their eyes, like in their like their vision was actually like a thing. Like if you're playing like Doom, they could see you from like a mile away.
Yeah.
I always remember there was other games like that would try stealth stuff, but they would have the AI be like way overpowered. Like for the original Far Cry, you're trying to do stealth, but if you like do anything, they can see you from like 2 miles away and you can't even see them. They're just like shooting through fucking trees.
Like the guards in Oblivion, like you do something one town over and they like the guards from another town come over like, hey, stop that. Like,
where'd you come from?
How'd you know I did that? You're just stealing shit out of some guy's house and he just spawns in there.
That's actually, I remember when I took game design class, one of the hardest things to do is to program AI is because the computer knows everything you're doing. So how do you program a computer
to make it dumb?
You have to. You literally have to make the computer dumb in order for AI to work, because otherwise, it's just not. It knows everything you're doing before you do it.
So you can actually,
or when you do it,
you can tell. You can see like the AI working in this game, because if you like ever turn around a corner and the AI chases after you, and it, like he like stops at the intersection and he kind of like locates you, you can see him like you almost like see the AI doing like a check, like oh you're in my vision cone now. I'm gonna shoot you. It's kind of like, it's actually interesting when you actually think about it that way.
But or how they open doors and shit, like they know how the especially like the facility level, like there's multiple doors and shit, but like they know the like it's not like they just check random ass doors. They like this door, that door, and then they find you. Like they actually look for you when they go into the room that they know you're in, even though they know where you're at.
Yeah,
they still weirdly enough look for. They still like that pause where you get like a second to like I got you first.
Which is another fun, like just brings up another little fun thing. Thing about this is a 8 out of 10 developers in this game never made a game before. This is their first game they ever made.
Mm-hmm.
So like it was a 10-man development team, and 8 of them were brand new to the game industry,
which probably helped because it wasn't like, because then they weren't conforming to what the industry standards were at the time.
Right. Actually like another interesting thing I read about is like, so the development pipeline was like they had a couple people make the levels, and they just made the levels like based the layout, and they had a couple other people basically input like the levels like objects and things like that. So one of the reasons why the game is so like there's a lot of open areas, there's a lot of areas that lead to nowhere, is because there wasn't any like there's no like oversight on that. So that's they basically other people put like objectives in and made the game a little more open, as far as like there wasn't a linear path of like you have to go straight to this and like the next level. It's like it's already like, you know, huge open level, and that's basically what I'm trying to say.
No, and it like there's two different styles of game design, and that's that each one has its benefits. Like, so for example, like Ratchet and Clank does the opposite. They pick a purpose for an area and then design the area around that purpose, which when you play those games it makes sense, because every world in Ratchet and Clank you begin and end at the same spot. You play through a path, and it always brings you back to either right at your ship or close to your ship. Other games that don't do this, it doesn't necessarily run into problems, but it's just a different style of game. Like Jak and Daxter did this, where they designed the world first and then they would design purpose for the world. And exactly what they did in GoldenEye. They designed all the levels first, and then they designed purpose for the levels.
Yeah.
So, and there's benefits and drawbacks. Like, drawbacks is that you can waste the player's time by exploring unnecessary things. Benefits, though, it makes the world feel a little bit more immersive. Like, when you're running through a warehouse and there's rooms that are just filled with shit that you don't need, it's kind of like real life. You're running through stuff and you don't really need it. So as long as it's not too, like, I think GoldenEye did a good job where it never felt like it was too much. There wasn't enough wasting of your time to make you actually be mad by it. It just felt like exploration versus...
It felt like it was like a little bit of a puzzle. Like, you have to figure out where you need to go. And not every single place you're going, you know, is like, has an actual objective to it. Or like,
and it's funny, like, even those places that don't mean anything on the one difficulty, the hardest difficulty, you eventually had to actually use that room, which was kind of cool. Like, that one clipboard's on that one desk and that... obviously place you'll never have to go is when you beat the first two waves.
Especially in the Severnite mission, where it's the one where you're in Russia and it's like the snow place and there's like all the different houses and stuff. Huge level. It's an awesome level. And you can tell the way they kind of got around how big it was, because there's a big almost like fog of war effect where you can only see so far in front of you. So that way the game can load and deload things without like having to like drop frame rate and stuff like that. I mean, it does inevitably when you get a shitload of enemies on the screen.
Nothing's shooting at you. Things are blowing up.
We used to do. We used to have Halo parties where we would not on purpose, but the frame rate would drop to like 3 because we would play on the smallest level possible and do all rocket launchers and infinite grenades. Mm. So people are just tossing stuff, and we've put 16 players on what was meant to be for like 6.
Fantastic!
Amazing. You did not survive that at all. People
peek out a corridor
and all, you just see rockets flying by. It was amazing. Because you don't know where anyone's at. You're just, there's rockets everywhere. You have infinite grenades, so people are just chucking grenades like crazy. Oh my god, it was one of the funnest levels. It was the most fun. Oh my god, we played it so much like that. It was great. For my bachelor party, we had a Halo party for my bachelor party.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm not into like the stereotypical stuff of going to a bar or a strip club or anything like that. So we went to a hockey game and went out to eat, went to a hockey game, came back and played Halo 1 and 2 until like that's 2 in the morning. Night. Oh, it was fucking awesome. And we hooked up the LAN stuff. It still worked. We brought out all of our we used 360s on this one just because everyone has 360s. Yeah. Not a lot of people have the original Xboxes, but I do, but yeah. Doesn't mean everyone else does. But the 360 makes the most sense. But anyway, so that type of game design was always... I actually liked it a lot in GoldenEye because it worked. It doesn't always work, but in GoldenEye it worked really well.
I feel like they caught lightning in a bottle with this game where everything just came together and was just... It just worked. It just fit. Like, I feel like for James Bond games, they've always been chasing GoldenEye. Absolutely. Like, every game after the fact it came out.
So, see, there's other Bond games that I like more than GoldenEye. Like, I love the PS2 ones. Not Agent Under Fire, necessarily, but Nightfire. I loved Nightfire. Like, I played the shit out of Nightfire multiplayer. We played the shit. Justin and I played the shit out of Nightfire multiplayer. We had this one game mode that we called 2 for the Price of 10, and I forget how it came out. It was just like something random that one of us said, and it just kind of stuck, and we were laughing at it. And what it was, we would play with, it was another all explosives on the smallest map, and we would play against a bunch of bots, and so you could not kill a bot without hurting yourself in some way. That's why we called it 2 for the Price of 10, because you would always like end up killing yourself by accident. And so what we would do, because there was no like death penalty for killing yourself in Nightfire for some reason, so we would kill the enemy. We would keep killing the enemies to a point where we were so low on health that like the next shot would kill us. And then we would just run into the water pit that would kill you. It wouldn't take a point away from us, but it wouldn't give the enemy a point. So we would win like 50-0 because they could never actually kill us.
That's pretty cool.
It was dumb. We were just screwing around
And that's like the best thing about GoldenEye and all these games is they, sure they had like their game modes, but like when you're sitting with your buddies and you all start like, you start making your own like, homebrew mods, that you all these rules that you all agree upon when you're playing it, like, so and so has to use fists, so and so has to use knives, like you all come up with these like weird little games, and like to me that's like GoldenEye created like this staple of a modding community essentially, where it's just like they gave this base game and it's fun. It's a great game. And then Perfect Dark took it to, like, the next level, in my opinion, where it's just, like, they took out all the feedback, like, all right, well, if you don't have three other people to play with, here's bots. You know what I mean? So it's just, like, I always look at it that way. Like, Goldeneye's, like, it's not the best game by any means. It
doesn't, but it's the starting point.
It's on, like, the Mount Rushmore of video games, in my opinion. It's up there. It holds a place, you know. Doom 2, I mean, sure, not Doom the second one, like Doom original Doom, you know, that first person.
There's so many, like, that's the thing, when people always talk about, like, what's your Mount Rushmore of video games, to me it should be games that aren't necessarily my favorite, but are the most influential, and it's so hard, because, like, so for example, a year later, Half-Life came out, and Half-Life also revolutionized the FPS, so it's like, which one do you put GoldenEye up there, because it did it for consoles, or do you put Half-Life up there? I would actually say GoldenEye over Half-Life, not in terms of quality, but, like, Half-Life is a very story-driven game. GoldenEye was a story-driven FPS. I'm not saying the storyline was great, it wasn't groundbreaking like Half-Life's was, but, like, up until then, you only had games where there wasn't, like, FPSs didn't have deep stories. GoldenEye kind of, it's like, gave you a story element and gave you objectives to complete within each mission. Half-Life was actually pretty unique because there was no real missions. It was just one continuous stream.
Yeah, it's a very big story game. Like, it's two different, like, aspects. It's like, but I think I'd have to give it to GoldenEye just because it's based on the multiplayer alone, like, exactly, console multiplayer.
But then Half-Life was, like, the first gave way to Counter-Strike.
True, but
I'm just saying, and you're a big Counter-Strike fan.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look even further back, you had, like, was that Marathon came out, the first Bungie game?
Yeah,
I mean,
that was the Halo predecessor.
I mean, that was, you know, to me, GoldenEye gets the Mount Rushmore, like, treatment is because it's the one that, like, hey, you can have four people at home playing a great time, you know what I mean? It's set
done
this
easily too.
Yeah, and there was not much to that game.
You didn't have to, like, get a whole LAN setup going or like play online together.
I think that's why, like, in the multiplayer is the big thing. Like, the single player is, you know, it's serviceable, it's fun, but if you ask people, like, what do you remember about GoldenEye? Everyone first says it's, like, all about multiplayer, all different modes. Like, they remember all this stuff from back in the day. It's just, I feel like it was a game that really brought the console, like, first-person shooter multiplayer.
Definitely.
To, like, the forefront of, like, you know, the public.
I mean, think, like, how much they crammed into a console game on the N64 versus, like, you get a computer game like Half-Life. Like,
actually, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, you can do what the hell you want. Exactly. So, you imagine they made a great game that still stands the test of time, in my opinion.
Well,
I mean, how can you not
put
that?
I don't know about if it stands the test
of time. Yeah, I don't know about that one. I can't agree with it.
It stands the test of time, Dan. We're still talking about it.
It stands the test of time in terms of legacy, but, like, our memories stand the test of time. Try to play it now. Like, the big thing is, like, we're so used to modern FPSs with their controls. Like, GoldenEye, the controls are still so wonky to me. The joystick would move forward, move back, look left, look right, instead of strafe left, strafe right. Now, you could kind of get around that by using the C buttons, because C left and C right would allow you to strafe left and right, so that way you can kind of, like, move forward and start looking, but then hold the C.
You, like, drift around corners.
So you could drift around corners. Yeah, that was pretty much what it was. It was like Tokyo Drifting right around the
corner. Just comb around
corners. Vin Diesel's, like, coming around the family.
Spell family.
And start spraying.
That was the first game I realized if you run, like, diagonally, you go way faster.
Oh, do you haul ass?
Never understood how that works, but.
Yeah. Well, I think it's maybe because they doubled the speed. If you're looking at, like, the speed variable or something like that, since you're hitting two buttons, it's adding the two buttons together. So you're hitting forward and diagonal. So it's the speed of the strafing right plus the speed of going forward. It's the only thing I can think of. Like, they didn't check to see if people were doing it at the same time. They're just like, poop that shit together. They're moving fucking flying.
That's how you beat and get those cheats. I mean, I'll be honest with you. That's the only way you can do it. Yep. You try to do it just running straight forward. You're a noob.
I wonder if that's how they intended it, too. Like, just, like, to break the game that way with the super fast running.
I wish it would have worked on that tank level streets where you just drift the tank and start combing people.
So I was actually doing some research before you guys came over this morning, and I was watching some gameplay of it, and I was watching a guy, like, play that tank level. The sound effects for when you run over an enemy is kind of disturbing.
Gross. Oh,
it's
yeah.
You hear, like,
it's pretty intense. Yeah.
You hear, like, a crunching sound.
Yeah. They put a lot of effort into their sound, I'll tell you
really
that.
They really did.
It was
that
nasty.
That tank is loud, too. That's right up there with the shotgun. Those things are so loud.
I will. You know, here's an interesting thing, Josh. I didn't think you know, maybe you didn't
probably
know about.
Just so you know.
But,
call him out. Tell me you already know this.
Miyamoto thought that game was way too, like, gory when it first came out.
Yeah?
Yeah, so basically he wrote a letter to them saying, you know, you guys think about turning it down. Like, and he gave him a recommendation at the end of the game that James Bond would go and shake hands with all the enemies in a hospital. That was literally Miyamoto's suggestion, which, of course, if you've ever played the game, did not make it in the game.
No. Oh, my God.
But that is a true story, and I found that to be the most interesting thing.
Yes. What kind of game, what kind of James Bond...
Oh, sorry there, mate.
It's like, we're in the middle of the Cold War. Actually, the Cold War was over then. But, like, all these communists, I'm going to go shake their hands. Because that's so weird.
Yeah.
I wish that would have been in the game, just because I remember how bad the hands were. They had no fingers. Yeah. They're like, it's just these long stiff hands. Kind of wish that would have happened, just so I could laugh at it.
Just to see what would... Oh, my God, that'd be fucking awesome.
I think instead of doing that, they made the intro of the game. If you ever, like, at the start screen, you let it go, and it shows all the characters.
Yeah.
Kind of doing a little, that was kind of, like, the compromise they made. Of doing that, they did that instead of the ridiculous hospital idea.
That's so weird.
Yeah,
they also had I also liked the idea that, like, each of the levels or each of the character files were like mission, like they were dossiers for the different players that were creating single players campaigns.
Flavor there.
I thought that was really cool, and like how you could just go to you would use the file tabs to like go to the single player and multiplayer and stuff like that.
Even that thing had like sound effects, like paper shuffling. So much sound in that game. Like,
there's a lot of sound.
Well, which is weird too, because the N64 didn't really like do well with samples, because so. A lot of times, so the sound on the N64 wasn't as good as the PlayStation, because the PlayStation could support Redbook audio or just CDs. I don't even know what the difference between like Redbook audio is and all. There's like a bunch of different colored books, and they all stand for different things. But Redbook audio is essentially just CD audio. And, you know, PlayStation could have that. And that's also where you get like weird shit where, like, if you loaded a level. And, like, because the PlayStation wouldn't constantly have the disc spinning. It would spin to load, and then as soon as it loaded the level, it would just stop. But what you could do is that you could, like, on certain games, you could open up the tray, take the game disc out. The game would still run because it loaded everything. It was into the system's BIOS, I guess. You could put a music CD in it. And so when you got to a point where if there was, like, a music change, it would go to that spot where it's supposed to be on the game disc, but it could load any point of any song
that's
on
cool.
So you could actually end up playing like music in your games that like it could be starting in the middle of like a track. It's interesting how that worked. Yeah, I didn't ever try it because I'm just too afraid to fuck with my PlayStation, and like I'm afraid I'm gonna break something.
You should try that with your 64, like halfway through the game, pull out the cartridge and stuff a CD in.
There was actually a thing that
that worked like that.
It's
how that works.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works. I'm pretty sure.
Just like fold up the CD and just kind
of you gotta fold it. You gotta make fold it. Fit.
Otherwise, it's like
blow on it.
Nintendo
too.
Seal of approval.
you gotta blow on it. So if it doesn't load the first time,
I'm pretty sure actually there was a thing that you could do where you would like take the cartridge out and put it back in, and it would do something. I forget what it was.
Yeah, it's like cartridge tilting or something. Like
yeah, there's a weird thing even in N64. It wasn't nearly as like. Ground as like cool as like how PlayStation would do it, and even though it wasn't an intended use for PlayStation at all, but like apparently there was something you could do. Like there's certain, I remember there was something with Banjo-Tooie or Banjo-Kazooie where you could like swap a card out or something like that, and it would like do something weird. I forget what exactly, but
that's crazy. I had never heard of that
before. I'd have to look
that's
it up.
Cool.
I could be just talking out of my ass, but I could have sworn I remember something with a cartridge swap on the N64. I just don't remember what it did or what game it was for or like what glitch it would cause. Or
I'm sure
what.
It's not like a repressed memory of you getting so angry at a game you just took the card out and instantly just threw it
and then put a new game in.
No, yeah. See, all what I would do when I would get mad as a kid, I would just punch the guy next to me. I would give him like a dead arm, and then I would feel bad about it.
Even if they weren't playing, just
yeah.
Sitting there.
Well, there was
up.
No. I remember playing like Halo 1 and stuff, and my next door neighbor came over, who was like maybe a year or two younger than me. I was like 14, and he was like maybe like 11 or something like that. And he didn't have an Xbox or anything like that, and he was beating me in Halo, and I was mad because I played Halo a lot. She
beat the shit out of
him. So every time he would kill me, I would punch him in the arm. And I don't think he ever played with me again after that.
Now he's one of those people like advocating like video games cause violence. He's just, like, he's just against
us. He's a good kid.
I had this kid when I was neighbors with, he would just beat me up every time I played.
Look at his bruises. They healed, but they're still there emotionally.
Emotional scars.
I apologize to him afterwards. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. I don't know why I'm being... I didn't say that. I didn't use
You didn't
this
apologize.
Word.
You just said, like, I thought about it. Like,
No,
I did. I thought about apologizing.
He's really good. I suck at this game. It sucks.
Makes me so angry.
What was the maddest you ever got at someone playing GoldenEye? Or I guess it could be any game.
I don't know. If we're going to stay with GoldenEye, I was actually one of the friends that like won a lot, so I didn't get really mad.
Everyone so got did
mad
people at me. Beat you up?
They didn't beat me up. They got mad. They're the ones throwing controllers and everything. I was the one just winning.
It reminds me of that proxy thing. It's just, I remember smacking controllers out of people's hands just to catch a break. Like when you're just getting trapped in a corner. Oh,
I think everyone did that though, just because they needed it. They needed that break. Then they'd be like, you know, you're like spawn pick, get away. Yeah.
Just that break. I mean, it was definitely, I mean, when you lost, it was definitely like raging back then. But no, it was definitely, I just remember like instantly, because when you brought that up, I was like, I remember that. Like, y'all get trapped. And like, I've been trapped before in Temple. And you get trapped in Temple, sucked. Like, you're just hoping just to get that door open. It's so slow. You're like, come on.
make it. I will say this. I do actually remember like the small times. I wouldn't get like angry, like you know, vocally mad. I would just, like, if I'm losing, I literally would just take the controller and just yank it so it'd pull the 64 and freeze the game. Oh, yeah. Please, we gotta start over.
I've been there. I forgot about that.
You just quietly do it. Just like, oh, that was an accident.
This cords are so short.
You do it so subtly that no one notices. Subtle with a silent G.
Shuttle. G's actually at the end of that word.
What about you, Justin?
I was always the passive aggressive one. So yeah, yanking the controller, or like I would play GoldenEye single player a lot with my neighborhood friend, and like since he owned it, he played it all the time. I'm like, so I just kind of like more and more get a little bit more annoying until like yo, can I just play? But that was pretty much
it. It's always taken a while for you to get like actually mad at something. You have such a like. I've seen you mad once, and it wasn't a fun experience. It wasn't at me, thankfully, if I remember.
He was beating you at Halo.
He was mad. I was fun. No.
I will say that when you talk about getting mad, like I didn't have any friends that got like super angry. Again, people got annoyed, but like there was no like freak out.
I would have been that mad.
But I had my one cousin. He was like, you know, he was actually really good. I should kind of like learn playing him when I was a kid. But he would get so angry when he lost, he would just shatter controllers.
What?
Oh, yeah. Those things, you realize, like, I mean, you pick them up, they're kind of like cheap plastic, so they're not exactly the most durable things. He would just take that thing and just chuck it against the wall, and he would just explode. He went through so many controllers, it was ridiculous.
I have a friend who's been on the podcast before. His name's Jay. He's really good at like fighting games and stuff like that. He was told me one time he was at a Smash Bros. Tournament, and this one guy lost, and he quietly wrapped up, he unplugged his controller, wrapped it up, was still sitting at the table, and then just smashed it into the floor and just shattered the controller everywhere. It was the weirdest thing. It's just like, he was so quiet, just quiet, wrap it up.
That was a slow build.
It was a slow build, like it just took a
just
little bit.
Just downloading rage, it's like, oh, come on, it's coming, and we're complete.
It's such a weird thing. That I really wish I could have seen it, because like, that would have been so surreal to see. No, I never really got physically violent, except for the time that neighbor kid. From that punch thing. It was dead arms. I never actually like punched him in the face or anything.
Says you now.
Never did. But I was always like, that's actually the reason I'm actually not a competitive player now is because of stuff like that. Because I know how I can get. Where like now, I was like, what, 14 or something like that, so I had much less impulse control. But like, even now, if I'm getting like frustrated by a game, like it just immediately becomes so unfun for me. even if the people I'm playing against are playing completely fair and I'm just the one that's sucking, I have to take every game like not seriously, because I get so competitive that I just like I don't have a good time, and I worry if I'm gonna make anyone else have a shitty time because I'm being an asshole, just screaming like, oh, I totally hit that, why didn't I do that, just being an idiot. So I don't play games competitively at all. One, because I suck, but two, because I don't like how I react when I suck.
Oh, that makes sense.
That was the reason why I stopped playing Counter-Strike. Because I started out being, like, you know, completely fine, knowing that, like, you know, you lose, and, like, but then eventually, like, you just get this own little ego, just doing good eventually for a while, then you're like, and it just, you get in your own head, and it becomes just really just not fun. It just, you start realizing you're becoming a different person almost.
Exactly.
And then, I think about, like, the rage thing. I remember, it kind of brings back the GoldenEye a little bit, but, like, I remember going in the multiplayer alone with, like, just I needed like to hear some sound, but like you go into library level with explosives and you just load up all the glass and you just hit that and just like, I remember just breaking the glass, and, like, a respawn was so quick. And even the respawn had a sound. It had, like, that weird little, like, sound it makes when stuff teleports in. But it was just, like, I remember just constantly just going in there just breaking glass for, like, hours on end. Just,
was that, like, your rage?
I don't know, it was just rage. It was just very, like, therapeutic. Okay. It was just, like, really, just, like, the sounds just go in there just blow stuff up. And, like, that's how you, like, I remember testing, like, how the guns worked and, like, own, like, a little practice mode where I could just test stuff. But it's, like, shooting a wall is not, you get bored real quick, but, like, when you get something, like, that has, like, some sort of reaction to how you hit it, it's like, oh, this is kind of cool.
It's like your first introduction to ASMR.
Be a problem. Yeah.
Really loud ASMR. Yeah, yeah. No, it's actually a really good Bond game that's also on the N64, The World Is Not Enough.
I like that one.
Yeah. That I am going to be covering, like I said, this is going to be kind of a series where I'm going to be covering a bunch of Bond games, and I just wanted to start out with this the big one.
I will say that I have played that not long ago either, you know, on my N64.
I think it holds up pretty well.
My opinion is, you know, it's mixed. Yeah. I'll say that.
That's why it's like the sticky grenade, right? When you get like the, it's almost like a proxy grenade. You can throw it or you can plant it.
I loved sure in the World's Not Enough, they had a homing rocket launcher called the Sentinel. You could turn on like a laser beam to kind of see where you would direct it, but you would fire it. And if you're holding the aiming or the R button to like aim, you can move the reticle or the sight, I guess, and it will follow where you're moving it to. Yeah. So that's how the homing would work. In more modern games, it would actually give you like a first person camera view of the rocket you're shooting.
Perfect Dark did it with a first person camera with the Slayer rocket. You actually got to be a first person rocket, and you can and it had like acceleration.
Perfect Dark was so ahead of its time on so many. And it had a lot of different. Like, I'm definitely going to talk about that relatively soon. An episode, but
yeah, it's definitely a GoldenEye game. I mean, James Bond game,
because it really is. It's all the ideas they wanted to put in GoldenEye that they couldn't because they didn't have the time or like the experience of doing.
Required expansion bay for it to get all the features. Because I mean, without the expansion bay, the game's fine. But when you add it, there's so much that little bit adds. It's just like it's a whole second game.
I thought you couldn't play single player with it.
I forget what
you couldn't play multiplayer.
Multiplayer, you got like four bots or something, or you might have no bots and just people. Like there was very limited multiplayer.
Yeah, I thought you couldn't play.
How much was the RAM expansion? Wasn't it like 2 megs?
Four
megs?
It went from four to eight.
Yeah. Four to eight.
It's surprising, though, not as many games you would think like took advantage of that. There's actually a very small amount of games.
Well, like Donkey Kong 64 only did it because that was the only way the developers could figure out how to fix a game-breaking glitch.
Yeah.
They couldn't figure out what the problem was, but they knew if the expansion port was in it, it just stopped it.
I think that was the first game.
They shipped every game.
Yeah, that's why it came with it.
It was the first game that required it. Yeah, that's probably why.
My parents, that was actually my first N64 game my parents bought me, and that's why I have the expansion pack, because it came with it. I didn't know any better. It just came with it. So I thought that was really funny.
I would have hoped that other games used it for a little better performance.
You would think.
Like from 4 to 8, considering the constraints back then, you would think that would make a major difference, but apparently not at all.
Well, they just didn't. They might not have known how to use it. Plus, like, especially back then, hardware development, like developing games for consoles, you had to know a lot more about like the console specs than you do now. Like now you can like, that's why indie games are so easy. I'm not saying they're easy. Game making is difficult no matter what era you're in. But now you have so little to worry about in terms of specs because you have everything's been so streamlined. Like there's programs that literally code, like when you code the game to work, it'll work on the PlayStation 4 or Xbox One, like right out of, like you can just put it on, you can literally load it onto your console and have it play perfectly. But back then, you actually had to be aware of the architecture of the console, so you had to know like what. Like which things were like where the data was going. Mm-hmm. Like if you look at there's a documentary I watched on the original Jak and Daxter game. They actually had to use like some of the PlayStation 1 processor power built inside the PS2. Since PS2 is backwards compatible, they actually would offload some work onto the PlayStation 1 processor inside of the PS2, so that way they could do more on the PS2's main processor. I could not speak. And it's shit like that. So, like, you actually had to have a working knowledge around that stuff. So I would wonder maybe the reason why more game companies didn't do that, because it's probably fucking hard to do.
Oh, yeah. The like, 64 was notoriously difficult to program for in the beginning, even without the expansion pack. So to add that on and utilize it to its full potential.
There's another thing that, like, I remember you talked about the controller configuration before and why it was kind of wonky. It's kind of a little weird.
It works for the time.
But there's actually... I forgot about this. I also looked this up. When they were making... They originally made the game, they didn't use the N64 controller. Because when it came out, when they were developing it, the N64 wasn't even out yet. So they had, the specs of the console, but they didn't have the controller, what the controller was going to look like. Nintendo held that pretty, secret. So they used a modified Sega Genesis controller.
Sega Saturn.
It was Sega Saturn. And they used that for the original input of the actual game.
Which is nuts to think about.
Yeah. Imagine going from Sega Saturn to an N64 controller. That's just, that's probably why it's
there was crazy. A joystick on it, so they at least had a joystick, but still. Yeah. I mean, even so, even with the N64 controller the way it is, I can't picture, them getting the controls any better than what they did for, what you had in terms of button selection and, that kind of stuff. Because, the only reason FPSs are so good now on consoles because you have two joysticks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty much... you pretty much turned the FPSs into, a twin-stick shooter, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, really, yeah.
And it works. What I loved the most, though, I remember playing GoldenEye for the first time, and my favorite thing ever was that the fire button was the Z button.
Yeah,
because it felt like you're actually pulling a trigger. Which I know it sounds kind of serial killer-ish. But I remember as a kid, I was like, holy shit, this is like a gun! Apparently, this is also another thing I did the research on. To reload, they wanted the players to, unhook and rehook in the rumble pack reload the cartridge and stuff like that. But Nintendo's like, no, that's too much like a gun.
Oh, that's too gimmicky for them, huh? That's Nintendo had limits at one point, is what you're saying. But we can't do that. That's gimmicky.
No, it was too violent. I think it was too much. But I would agree. That would have been fucking awful if you think about it. Every time you have to reload.
Terrible. You know how many broken shit people would have?
Oh, my God. The hinge on the bottom of the controller just would have been busted.
Oh, yeah.
It wouldn't have held anything in.
One session, it's already gone.
Yeah, it would have been awful. It was an awful idea. It's a cool idea, but it would have been fucking awful.
I love actually speaking of reloading, how you reload in GoldenEye. He just puts his hand away and you hear all the guns make the same reload sound.
It's hand in the rocket.
Even the rocket launcher.
Rockets got bullets. I was always disappointed that the rocket didn't, when you played paintball mode, didn't make a giant spray
that
of
paint.
Cool. I was expecting explosions would be giant just messes of paint, but that wasn't the case. That's kind of if I could go back in time and be like, yo, kill Hitler. No. Go back to GoldenEye. I'm going to fix the paintball system for the explosives. Change history.
It's a real weird thing to go back in time for.
It's a responsible use of time travel. Minimal butterfly effect there.
I like how that's the one thing that you want to fix.
Look, I ain't trying to rewrite.
Nothing's changed at all on this.
Just come and play in GoldenEye and make him paint. Look, I painted the whole room in a rocket.
Remember that time we could use the whole rocket to paint the room? Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. Just saying.
That's it.
I think that's a responsible use of time travel. Come around changing shit.
No, I would love if you changed that and all of a sudden you just fast forward in time, the world just ends. That's the one catalyst.
I fucked up. Shit.
I should have done this. And little do you know, because of the world ending, you don't even have power to go back in time to fix it anymore. So now you're just in this dystopia, and all that's left is just paint everywhere.
I don't even get to play the game. Just in the cartridge, there's no electricity.
I'm thinking of a Mad Max style, everyone plays to the death and just play GoldenEye on paintball mode. It's just going weird, to the extreme.
We gotta
crazy
make that movie. We gotta make that movie. It's post-apocalyptic, but in the way that you decide for the way people decide territory is by playing GoldenEye, and the best player in the league, and so the punishment is to be playing as Jaws or something that. If you committed a crime, then if you happen to be playing in the tournament, you have to play as Jaws. But if you're an exemplary citizen, you play as Odd Job.
How Splatoon was created.
There's a movie called The FP. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
It's not
sounds
it's,
erotic.
It's real.
Yeah, I was gonna say
the first penetration.
The silent G.
The silent G.
The first penetration. Oh my god. What? Oh, man, Josh, I want to let everyone know that came from you.
Yeah,
I'm not taking credit for that one. I don't want that.
Josh, you got a history of violence and sexual activity in this podcast.
Oh, Josh is like homemade movie, The First Penetration.
All right, so the FP.
I can't stop thinking about it.
It stands for Fraser Park, really. But it's a movie about It's a post-apocalyptic where a bunch of street gangs fight for control of Fraser Park by playing Beat Beat Revelation, which is a deadly version of Dance Dance Revolution.
Oh.
I'm dead serious. I have this movie on my computer. It's the fucking craziest movie I've ever seen
That's
in my life.
Nuts.
Is it like violence?
No.
Like warriors? Like
no, literally, so the one guy in the beginning, he's competing, and he... The way he dies after he loses is he just kind of like... And literally, like, his knees start getting wobbly. He starts just kind of getting more bendy. And then he just falls down and dies there. Like, that's it. Like, there's no explanation. It's not like he was electrocuted. He just died.
It sounds about as serious as that movie, like, You Got Served, when, like, gangs, like, stop fighting over, like, oh, I'll dance you. Yeah. I got guns. I'll outdance you.
I never understood that movie in my entire life.
All these hoods come together and be like, oh, he just spun on his head. We can't go shoot his house anymore. I was like, shit, how did you see that?
No, in the real life that they did that, they'd just all be shot instantly. Yeah. It's like, oh.
Oh, you beat us? Blah, blah, blah.
It was, but that's kind of where it came from. Like that, like how weird would it be to have like a GoldenEye post-apocalyptic where you play games like that?
I'd be okay.
And it's
with
like
it.
A deadly version. It's literally a deadly version of GoldenEye, and like Pierce Brosnan comes out and kills the loser.
He's like, there's just like shrines of him like everywhere. You just gotta go.
He's a god amongst men. In this
you gotta
world.
Kneel before Pierce.
I'd be a revolutionary. I'd be like Rushman Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah, right?
Underground.
Or no. You George Lazenby would be the revolutionary.
Oh, those are the weird people.
Actually, what's funny, George Lazenby literally kind of was like a counterculture hippie. So he, so after Sean Connery quit being Bond for literally one movie and then came back for one more movie, George Lazenby filled in. That was his one and only Bond appearance. And he actually stepped away from the project willingly. Because right after the first one came out, he got really big into the counterculture and thought James Bond was too square. So he literally grew out like hair and became like he grew out his hair. He got a big ass beard and he just became like a hippie and quit the James Bond franchise. Then they paid Connery like $1 million to come back, which in like 1973 is just fucking nuts.
Yeah, he works at Target. Just wishing he had that James Bond money.
He wasn't an actor either. He was just a model.
No, he was an Australian model.
He had literally no acting experience whatsoever.
It's always so weird. Like what? So like Bond is British, but like Sean Connery is not British. He's Scottish or Welsh. Yeah, Scottish.
It's like Welsh. Scottish.
George Lazenby is Australian. I think Roger Moore was actually British. Timothy Dalton, I think was also Welsh. Pierce Brosnan, I think, is Irish. I want to say. I think he's Irish.
Yeah.
And then Daniel Craig, I believe, is actually British.
I mean, they all sound like they're still colonies of the UK. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, technically...
I still think that the craziest one was in Goldfinger. Our Goldfinger. Like, the British-German guy.
Well, he couldn't even speak English. They literally dubbed over his entire... if you watch old James Bond movies, most of the Bond girls and villains, that's not their real voice. They just ADR'd everything. It's fucking crazy.
It's like all the Bond women, like none of them in the verse, like handful of movies, spoke like
any... Was
there
voice acting in GoldenEye? I don't remember. I remember there's cutscenes.
I mean... There's like minor voice acting. It's really heavily sampled. Like you can hear it. Like the bit rate's awful. I'm pretty sure you could. Like Alec Trevelyan, I'm pretty sure says shit to you.
Yeah.
Like and you would hear Boris. Stuff all the time. Like Boris, I'm invincible.
Dude, he had my favorite scene in the movie when he's clicking that fucking pen.
Oh my god, the most memorable scene.
Oh my god, it's just James Bond watching him.
Let's
just
segue to talk for the movie.
Give me the clothes, Natalia.
We've actually been going on for like almost an hour and a half, so let's talk about the movie a little bit before we wrap it up. So Boris, best character in the movie?
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
I mean, he's just this. Alan Cumming is one of my. I just like the movies he's in. I mean, shit, he was Nightcrawler. He was in fucking Spy Kids. He was the villain.
Oh my god, he was. Holy shit, I didn't even notice that.
I just always find his just personality is just intriguing. He's very just eccentric in certain ways, but like Boris is fantastic in that movie. Just the
Boris
squirrely...
is just nuts.
Yeah.
I love is like all of his riddles are some bad innuendo. Oh, it's not even like clever. It's not even like clever.
No.
You sit on it, but you can't take it with you.
He's the worst hacker ever. What is riddles?
No one can figure out my riddles, which is clearly just like At least okay, so
shitty got off like a fucking Laffy Taffy.
It's a Snapple bottle.
Yeah. Well, the first one was like they're right in front of you, and they open very large doors. I can't do accents. they open very large doors, and she just types in knockers. I'm like, wow.
I feel like he's the example of like nowadays what they tell you not to make your password as.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I didn't even think of that. What I actually really liked also is that I think Natalia is like the best Bond girl in my opinion. Like she doesn't necessarily like it. She's one of the few that doesn't like just fawn all over Bond. Like she still falls for him, but it's not like
she's not that damsel in distress.
She's not a damn. She's a hacker. She actually fights and shit. Like she. I don't know. She just actually felt like a person versus just like
eye
candy.
She actually felt like in the movie, like I actually felt like her performance was better than most Bond girls. Like she actually felt like she was a good actor.
She was really good.
Like she was like most of the Bond girls like are just atrocious when everything they say. As far as like it's the most unbelievable. Like
Denise Richards.
She's not good at all.
I actually, this is a controversial opinion. My favorite Bond movie is The World Is Not Enough.
Really?
I actually enjoyed that one.
That's my favorite one. I think it's got one of the best plots, though, despite Denise Richards not doing well in the acting department. But, like, Sophie Marceau, who's, like, the... like spoiler alert, she's the villain of the movie. Yeah. You don't know it. It's a really good double take, but I mean, I love GoldenEye, but, like, World's Not Enough... the only reason I think I say it's my favorite is because it was my first one. And so a lot of it's nostalgia, but there's, like, certain parts of it I just think are, like, legitimately, like, really... like, they still hold up really well.
It's okay.
Fair enough.
It's okay.
I'll take it.
It's my second favorite Brosnan movie. I'll give you that.
What, GoldenEye being your first?
Yeah. The other one's terrible.
That's my favorite Bond movie. There's no...
Tomorrow Never Dies is terrible.
I love Tomorrow Never Dies for its action set pieces, but everything else is... So, Tomorrow Never Dies, the villain of that... he's a multimedia conglomerate, like multimedia mogul, and his whole business plan is based off of television, newspapers, and magazines.
Yeah. Mm.
And he rules the world. Bond didn't have to do anything. He just had to wait, like, 5 years. he would have lost everything.
The plot was so dumb, too. It was just like...
outweighed him.
That's literally all he had to do.
I did feel like after, like, in those Pierce Brosnan era, like, their movies got a little, like, ridiculous with, like, the dumb plots of just, like...
yeah.
We don't know what to do.
A lot of times Bond movies, what they do is they pick set pieces first and then write the plots around them. And that's what sometimes it works really well. Other times, not so much. So, for example, like the newest one, Spectre, awful movie. The set pieces are fine, even though I don't think they're that great. But like Skyfall, great movie. In terms of plot, doesn't make any fucking sense because they designed it around the set pieces, but it was still a great movie. And the set pieces work. So there's pros and cons. You get hits and misses. And I think like GoldenEye did really well, especially with that tank chase scene. That was awesome.
There's a lot of fun scenes in that. Yeah. I also think it did help. Like the bad guy was a very like just really think about it. Start of Sean Bean's career. Like he really wasn't in anything else before that. Like that was his first big role. And I think he knocked it out of the park.
Oh, he was fantastic.
He was great. Like, he was just a very, like...
it kind of fell for him, too. And, like...
yeah.
I mean, like, you get it. He was kind of one of those, like, villains. You're like, all right, I get it. I mean, you're kind of a piece of shit.
No, it's really funny also. There's a lot of, like smaller actors at the time that became bigger mini drivers in GoldenEye.
Yeah,
she's right. So, when you meet Valentin Zhukovsky, the Russian gangster, she's his mistress, but you hear her in the background, like, singing really badly. Like, and Bond or Pierce Brosnan's like, who's strangling the cat?
I actually had to look it up to see if it was actually her.
As Minnie Driver, yeah. It's crazy. A very young Minnie Driver before she got famous from, like, I think, like, Good Will Hunting was, like, her breakout role or something like that. But, no, I think what I loved about GoldenEye, that intro, that, like, that cold open is one of the best cold opens in all of Bond movies. Like, it is hands down one of the best ones. Like the bungee jumping off of the dam and then just sneaking into the base, the cheesy one liner of like Bond like coming down from the vent, knocking on the guy's newspaper, and the guy's like, "What the fuck?" And he pulls it down. And he's like, "Sorry, I forgot to knock," and then punches him in the face and knocks him out.
Yeah.
And then he sets all the timers, and you meet 006, Alex Trevelyan, played Alec, played by Sean Bean, and then the place blows up. I still love my favorite scene when I was a kid was when he was hiding behind those explosive containers on like the rack and just moving it slowly. And it's just like, and it's just so awkward. And then he turns on the conveyor belt, shoots all the others to like spring him on and just rides it out. Oh, it was fucking awesome. It was such a good
scene. It's a really great scene. I will say that. Like, it's a very memorable beginning. And he chases the plane.
On a motorcycle.
Oh my God. It's just, it's like the epitome of like the Brosnan era just being like ridiculously over the top. But that one was at least most, I always say how crazy it was, the most realistic one out of all his movies. His movies are so weird. He flies through like a laser and tomorrow, like that was a Die Another Day. He flies through the freaking sun laser with a plane and the plane is still intact. And
I thought you were just talking about the cold open. No, Die Another Day is the worst James Bond movie, period. I like watching it for how insane it is. Like, it's enjoyable because it's just bad. There's an invisible car. There's literally an entire castle made of ice.
It's not invisible.
It's invisible.
It's cloaking.
It's invisible.
It's invisible. He flies through a freaking sun laser.
Well,
a plane.
Funny
it's melting
that
everything around it. But the plane's fine.
The first.
It's got a mirror on it. It's just general science. I don't understand how you don't get this.
It's got a mirror on it. And that fixes all.
I've seen cartoons where you just shine a mirror back, you blast the sun,
destroy it.
It's just facts, dude. It's just science. It's common science.
It's science. There's flat, don't you?
Yeah, bro. If it was round, it would have fell off. Think about it. Yeah. You ever try to stand on the basketball, you fall. Now, science.
You know, if he would have said that, you would have yelled at him for saying dumb shit.
Dude, right? We always say dumb shit.
I don't know about this. You show me up right now.
I'm saying a little bit.
It's like we switched places.
But so what were your favorite moments of the movies? We'll kind of touch on this and then we'll wrap up. Because holy shit, it's almost an hour and a half. Yeah.
So,
mine's the pen thing. All Boris is just, it's just fantastic. I liked Xena Onatopp, Femme Fatale. She was like this really, like, I kind of thought she was going to, like, switch sides.
Batshit crazy Femme Fatale.
Yeah, I totally thought. I was like, maybe she's going to, like, save Bond at the end. No, wrong. Nope. Spoiler, she gets got.
She gets killed by a tree.
But I think just the whole movie.
The bungee cord pulls her back and she gets crunched.
Yeah, I mean, just the cast alone in that movie is, I mean, everybody in that one kind of nails it. At least everyone has screen time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, it's got to be, like, the end, the whole end sequence with the radar dish thing.
That was awesome.
That was sick,
and the very end, how Alex gets it. Or Alec. I keep saying Alex, too.
I know. The whole dish falling.
Oh, my God.
Him.
That was so cool. It was like, because he falls, and then you're like, ah, man, that's how he goes. And then, like, again, he's just like, he's alive, and like, that sucks. And it's like, oh, that sucks even more.
I think mine's the intro scene to the jungle, because that's when the end's coming up, so, you know. That's,
with the missile?
Yeah. That's just leading up to it.
That's a good scene, too.
I always feel like there's certain parts, especially in movies that you watch a lot, there's always, like, a certain scene where you, like, it's like a comfort food scene, almost, where, like, you just, like, ah, the movie's almost over, I'm enjoying this. For me, it's kind of like, it is the jungle scene there. There's, like, I don't know, it's really weird. Like, it's, I don't know how to describe it. It's, like, it's the most comfortable part of the movie for me, where it's like,
I get what you're saying.
It's really weird. Like, I don't know why that emotion comes out then, but, like, there's certain scenes in, like, movies that I love dearly, where there's just, like, the one scene where I'm just like, ah, this is, like, my favorite scene. For no reason. Nothing good could happen in it. You just, like, maybe it's the set.
Yeah.
Maybe you like that it's, like, a reprieve from the action, or a reprieve from all the drama, or something like that, whatever the movie may be. What is it? This isn't an exact example of it, but like the movie Miracle about the U.S. 1980 hockey team.
Best sports.
It's one of my favorite
movies.
Definitely
a good one.
It's literally like the it's the scene on the ice rink right before the final game where like Herb Brooks and his wife are like walking around. It's just comfort food to me. Don't know why. But I literally will go put that movie on and only watch the final tournament. I just love watching that final tournament.
So well done.
Yeah, there's certain, like, I get like that mentality is like you turn on a certain part in a movie and like no matter what part that movie is, like you're like, oh nice, like I can watch it. Like I was like, I can come in halfway through Dogma or to be 10 minutes left of the movie Dogma. Whatever reason, that's like my go to comfort. Like I've seen it a billion times. Just
it's a
like
great movie.
It's just like when it really when you know, Matt Damon loses his wings. I'm like, oh, I'm in. I'm all right. There's not much going on at that point in the movie anymore. But I was like, I'm in. I love this. I'm game. Let's just ride this movie out for the last 10 minutes that are left.
But all right, so I guess to wrap all this up, thank you guys all for joining me. Like, this was a shitload of fun. I actually was amazed. I was thinking that we were going to run out of stuff to talk about the game, but holy shit.
No way. Not for this one.
This is great. So I guess plug yourselves, guys. I mean, I don't know if...
Well, okay.
Wow, dude.
Jeez. I am just like, I can't speak today.
That's a real heavy insult there.
Silent G on the plug.
Yeah, why don't you go plug yourself?
Well, shout yourselves out. There we go. Like, what do you guys have to plug?
I'm too busy plugging myself right now.
So watching. About that. It's nice. We're on No Geeks Loud Podcast. You can check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and all that.
K-N-O-W.
K-N-O-W. Yes. I'm also on Pornhub / Silent G. If you want to just check out some of my other work.
Silent G.
Definite article.
No imposters.
Basically what he said about the Pornhub stuff.
Justin, what do you have to promote?
Not much. I just do some cosplay stuff on the side, but I'm at Kitsu Ninja.
Do you want to spell that?
K-I-T-S-U-N-I-N-J. Silent J.
I swear, every time I'm on a podcast with you guys, there's some dumb inside joke that always comes out of it. Where I got the inside G now. Or silent G.
Inside G?
Inside G. You start putting G's in the middle of words. You're not the inside G. You got to pronounce that.
It's his brother.
Put an umlaut on top of
the
it.
The inside G.
Put an umlaut.
Oh, we're German.
It's the inside G. You have to say it. It's Frankengurter. It's umlaut.
I'm just picturing, like, you have a word that's just all consonants, and you fit a G in the center of that. You're like, how the fuck do you pronounce this? Figure it out.
I put a G in the middle of the word fuck. It's a fuck. What the fuck is this?
That's how you say it, too.
Oh, my God. All right. I'm going to try to condense the shout-outs, because I normally go on for, like, 10 minutes with them. But shout-out to the Podbeard Network that I recently joined. TJ and all the great shows on the Podbeer Network, you know, Two Guys in a Game and The Hotter Show and Mics and Beers and a bunch of awesome stuff. Go check it out, podbeernetwork.com. Also, shout out to The Apex and The Abyss, one of my favorite true crime podcasts. Drinks with Larry, Amazing Nerd Show. The Frame Savers. Also, shout out to Firespin Gaming. I forgot to give him a shout out last week. He gave me shit for it, but no, he didn't. He's a good friend of mine. We've gone game hunting a couple times now. We hang out at cons, so always. His name's also Josh. Really good dude. So go check out his Instagram page, Firespin Gaming.
His YouTube channel's dope too.
Oh yeah! My God, that's the big thing. He's gonna be mad even when he hears this.
Oh my God, homie, I watch your shit.
His YouTube channel. He posts videos of his game hunting, and it's really awesome. Some of the shit that he finds, and I'm get really jealous that he found fucking Earthbound for like $7.
Dude, just go rob him. Just go fuck him up.
It's an overrated game anyway.
But all right. So that wraps up this episode of Still Loading. Thank you all for listening. You can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Still Loading Pod on all of them. Also reach out to me, stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. Also, if you guys have any questions, I'm thinking of doing a Q&A episode in a couple of weeks or so. So if you have any questions that you can think of, shoot them my way on any of those avenues, and that should be it. So do you guys have any final words, final thoughts before we finish this up?
Go plug yourself.
That's how we're going to end. So, have a good time. Have a good one, everyone, and I'll see you all next time.